The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors. Keep on, keep on.
All right. Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you. I'm live and local here in our studio on Federico Drive, and glad to be with you here. It's Friday, October 20th, already two-thirds of the way through October, and here we are. A little darker out there in the morning now, a little gray. Going to get some rain, I think, in the forecast, and that's just, the way it goes. We do have a great guest here this morning. We have our state representative for the city of Pittsfield, Tricia Farley Bouvier. She is the state representative for the 2nd Berkshire District, and we're going to be here for the full hour talking about some of the state issues that maybe you didn't hear about because you live in the Berkshires, and the state is that way. So Tricia is going to fill us in on a lot of things going on in the state legislature. First, let's go to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today. Here we go.
Weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, showers likely this morning, then showers with a slight chance of thunderstorms this afternoon. Highs in the lower 60s. Southeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Gusts up to 30 miles per hour this afternoon. Chance of rain 80%. Tonight, rain. Lows in the lower 50s. Southeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of rain 90%. Saturday, rain. Highs in the upper 50s. North wind 5 to 10 miles per hour, increasing to northwest 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour in the afternoon. Chance of rain 90%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Gee, it's Saturday and it's raining. Can you believe it? That never happens. Oh my goodness.
Definitely
just
true.
We can't it's get out of the way of the rain for the weekends. It's been
definitely true.
Oh, it's nuts. So good morning, Tricia Farley Bouvier. How are you?
Good morning, Sean. It's always nice to join you first thing in the morning.
That's what I say. The earlier the better.
There was something extra special about, getting out here just as, getting here just as it's getting light.
But yeah.
Here we are.
No, it's weird, isn't it?
So it makes me think the next time I'm going to be here, we'll get here in the dark. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I think so. Yeah. You just get used to it, I guess. But I got used to the summer. That's my time. I really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. That's the best time. But, we trudge through. We get through in the winter. That's what we have to do.
Well, it's, obviously a really nice time of year in the Berkshires with all the colors, though.
Oh.
I'm sure I'm with most people agree with me that the colors this year just aren't quite the same.
Not quite the same, but, here it is in the almost late October, and now some of the colors
some
are
of
popping
the red,
out, right?
Does it seem like the red is really coming through right now?
I thought it was going to be brown, and then just everything was going to drop,
That's what happened in my yard.
Yeah.
I had this really beautiful tree. Some years I've taken pictures 10 days in a row and watch it change. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool thing. And this year, they didn't change. They just fell off 5 weeks ago.
Yeah.
They were gone.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
You never know what you're going to get, like the box of chocolates. So thanks for joining us here this morning.
Sure.
And lots of stuff going on in the state legislature, stuff that a lot of times we don't necessarily focus on or hear about here in Berkshire County. The people paying attention probably do, but it's nice to catch up on it once in a while. So I hear there was a state budget passed this year, and that's always a April through June process. This year a little bit later than usual, got passed about a month later.
Well, so it got passed in the normal course of business.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, April through June. It really starts back in February when the governor files her budget, and then it goes through a process. Sometimes I give these little mini civics lessons here. So April is the House, mm-hmm. takes up the budget. May is the Senate. And then June is when the conference committee between the two work it out. We passed it. And then there was some the governor made some vetoes. Mm-hmm. And so then we came back in September, and we were overriding some of the vetoes.
And this is the first time in 8 years that you've worked through a Democratic governor and her vetoes, as opposed to a Republican governor and his vetoes.
Right. So there were less vetoes to work through. I don't think we've gotten through all of them yet, figuring out what, you know. I'll give you an example of a veto that wasn't a problem. This is a very important policy change that was in this budget, and we refer to it as no-cost calls.
Okay.
And that is if you're in the House of Correction or in prison, it doesn't cost you money now to call home. Whereas before, the families were paying to make these calls. Mm-hmm. Now, they were paying a vendor. Okay, and then the vendor would give money, like, I'm going to use the word kickback, you know, a portion of that to the facility for programming. But really, the burden was on families. And we're not doing our communities any good if the people who are incarcerated are not connected.
Yeah, so and that you're kind of punishing people that that didn't do the crime,
right,
as it were.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a movement for a while to do that. It ended up in this budget. So the point I'm getting to is the governor's veto. So the governor believes in no-cost calls, but the way it was written into the budget, it was retroacted to this past January 1st. Mm-hmm. And she's saying, we're going to start it this coming January 1st. Okay. Like, we can work with that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's those kind of policy changes we're happy to have done. And then government isn't, it's not a dictatorship, right? You got to work with people to
make
sure.
And there are compromises you have to make.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But something that is of interest to the people of Pittsfield, and people of Pittsfield would understand it better than most, is that now all around the state, there are universal school meals, universal free school meals. Yeah, so breakfast and lunch for every child in Massachusetts is free. Mm-hmm. We have seen the data to show that when kids are not hungry, they can learn. Mm-hmm. Now, that sounds pretty common sense, right? But we also have learned that is saving each family $1,200 per child per year. So that is money in people's pockets. When families are struggling to say, I have an extra $1,200, that's real money.
Yeah. And what was the cost equation for the state on that? Was it program that made sense fiscally also?
I'm going to say it's investment.
Yeah.
So it started because of a federal pandemic era grant program, and Massachusetts said, no, we're going to stick with it throughout. So I'm not... this isn't something you can say, if we spend this amount of money this year, we're going to save this amount of this year. Mm-hmm. It's not like that. It's more of a value statement that we want our kids to not worry about.
Where does the funding come from? Does it come from local municipalities, or does it come directly from the state? How does that work?
It's coming through the state. Mm-hmm. Right. But I always remind people that whether it's state money or local money, it's your tax money.
Still taxpayer dollars, for sure.
Right. Yeah.
But it's just a matter. Sometimes the words unfunded mandate come through and you say, okay, is this something being forced upon us by, decisions on high, or is that something that the local, so there will be state funding that will.
Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. This is absolutely a funded mandate.
Yeah, there you go. So, and again, like you said, having students be well-fed, and you can't necessarily guarantee that, right? And then the other idea that I think about there is sort of like the shaming factor.
That's right.
When kids come through that lunch line and, their account is overdue or they don't have the money in their pocket or whatever, what do you do? And there have been some really terrible stories about kids and what has happened to them. And it's social, but it's all, how can that not affect the rest of your day?
You're absolutely right. So now everybody eats. And the other thing we're doing, this is a side of this universal school meals, is working with the Food Security Caucus, working to connect local farms to our schools. And so whenever we can get fresh local produce, now we're helping our local economy and we're getting kids better food, healthier food. And then, of course, there's a whole bunch of reasons why that is better for the environment, because, You know, you're not putting all that transportation, you know, the cost. And what I mean by cost on that is the cost to the environment of transportation. It's one of the biggest impacts on our environment. And it's better for the earth to have, you know, food be growing in it. So,
well, certainly good for local farm and farm families and things like that, too. Right. And especially, I would think, in the Berkshires and rural Western Massachusetts, where you're more likely to have local farms maybe than some of the more urban areas in the East.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And if our farms can, you know, supply some food for communities in the East, then that's good too.
Yeah, absolutely. Still counts as local. You stay, keep it in the state.
Yep.
So, those were a couple of examples of some of the vetoes that you had to override. Were there any that didn't get overridden, or did some of the vetoes stay in place?
Yeah, now you're testing me a little bit. Not too bad. I can't come up with them. But I do want to talk about something that was super recent, and that is this tax reform package that people may have heard about. It's been a long time in the making, and, you know, this was really people coming together over some very difficult policy issues, and there's disagreement, you know, about what works and what doesn't work. There's something called the estate tax, and how it used to be estates over $1 million would have to pay this extra tax. And, you know, that sounds good to you and me, because if you're selling a house for over $1 million, you probably have the money, and the state could use the money, and the local governments can use the money. But what's been happening is just kind of a regular person in a place like Somerville, you know, a house that they raised their family in, you know, and in that kind of part of the state, right, there's a lot of triple deckers in places like Winthrop and, you know, Revere, and, you know, their homes are now $1 million.
Yeah.
And so
And they may not have thought of them as a $1 million house when they bought them, right? But things have changed. The landscape and finance and housing has changed.
And more important, so then I think to myself, well, if your value went up $1 million, maybe you can afford to, you know, give a little bit to school meals, for example. Yeah. That's what we but what's happening is that we are rather unique in our estate tax being at that level at $1 million. And so people were changing their residency so they wouldn't have to pay that. And so instead of getting, you know, some money from that sales, that estate tax, we were getting none because it was going to another state or, you know, something like that. Yeah. And so we have to make sure, just, I don't know, if you're pricing your coffee, okay, you might say this is a fair price for coffee, but if you're out of line with everybody else, it's not going to work. So that's part of it.
Well, and people don't realize too that states are in competition with other states, right? I mean, and so there is a pressure to keep some things competitive,
right?
Especially tax laws and things like that, to make sure that you're not, it's like money is sort of fungible like water, right? It'll find its way out. And so there are things that you have to keep in mind when, you know, you might have the best idea in the world about how equitable things need to be, but then, you know, something like that happens, like, oh, we're losing tons of tax dollars. We can't do that.
And so, you know, once you pencil it out, I think that this was the right decision to do, and that might, people who know how progressive I am are like, wait a minute, Tricia, how could you have possibly agreed to that? But really, once you pencil it out, it means more tax revenue for Massachusetts, which is, you know, what we're...
So now what is the estate tax level? Did it rise or was it eliminated? How did that work out?
It's a complicated form, but basically went to $2
million. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just the way they're doing it, it's more of a credit. But yeah, it's basically went to $2 million. But in that package, there's other really good things. Something that's particularly good for Pittsfield, big win for Pittsfield, is a state program called the Housing Development Incentive Program. You might have heard me say the words HDIP before. Now, HDIP has funded housing projects in Pittsfield in the past. For example, the very first one in the whole state was the Rice Silk Mill.
Oh, wow.
Okay, St. Mary's, or sorry, I should say Morning Star is another one. There's several in Pittsfield, but there's several that are in the queue. So they have been approved, but this HDIP program across the state has been so successful They only have so much money each year to spend. And so they say, oh, and you're approved, but it's going to take us 4 years to get you the money. So in this housing crisis that we have statewide, the HDIP program is only for gateway cities.
Okay.
So there are 26 gateway cities
which
in Massachusetts.
Pittsfield and North Adams, right?
North Adams is not a gateway city.
Not a gateway. I thought it was.
Yeah. So North Adams isn't has the right population. You need to have a certain population.
Okay.
So Pittsfield's the only gateway city in Berkshire County. But Holyoke, Springfield, Chicopee, Fall River, Brockton, Everett, Lowell, Lawrence, that type of, not Boston. Importantly, not Boston. And so we can create thousands of units in the short term because these projects are already ready to go. And so with, you know, we had some ARPA money and we had some surplus money. So we are clearing that backlog, okay, $57 million, clearing that backlog to get these projects funded. And then we've raised the cap. And so instead of $10 million a year, it's going to be $30 million a year. It's a really, really important project for Pittsfield. And it was something I spent a lot of time advocating for with my Gateway City colleagues to get that.
What does Pittsfield's share of that look like? Because
well, it depends on the project, right? So it's the project that gets approved. So Pittsfield, because of the professionalism of our community development office, our partnership with Berkshire Housing, we are very, very competitive in these dollars. You know, I don't want to say this too loudly, but I think we get more than our fair share here in Pittsfield.
It's about time, right?
And that's one of the reasons I fought so hard for it, is because I knew it's been such a successful project for us.
And do those projects kind of look like, can you imagine those being similar to, like you said, the Rice Silk Mill or the Morningstar project?
Absolutely.
And where you're repurposing, especially in Pittsfield, an older building.
That's exactly what it is.
A building with good bones, as they say.
That's exactly what it's for. It's not for new construction.
Okay.
It's for taking these buildings just like this. Now, I don't want to misspeak, but I'm pretty sure White Terrace is going to be part of the HDIP program. There's another project on North Street that's, you know, in the queue. So these are exactly the kinds of projects we want to have online.
And so important right now with the housing crisis, as you mentioned. I'm not sure exactly. You probably see it better from a statewide perspective of how hard the housing crisis is hitting Berkshire County with compared to, you know, other parts of the state. I would guess that it's no better or worse here, but maybe it is.
So I would say, yes, I think it's no better or worse here. Of course, it's the volume that can be different here. It's just that people in the other parts of the state don't think it impacts us. And of course, you know, it does. And so, you know, we need to recognize, you know, people might have heard the term Mass and Cass. So that is an intersection in Boston, these two streets, Massachusetts Avenue and Cassnia. Malnia Cass Boulevard, and that intersection has a massive tent city there, because of the homelessness, you know, population. And it's right on a major intersection, and so that is the kind of like the most dramatic example of that. But of course, there's homelessness and people just trying to afford housing, you know, everywhere.
It's just it's kind of out of control. And of course, the mortgage rates are not helping, which means everything sort of slides down from there. Rents are really crazy because the supply is very small. So, you know, supply and demand, things are just going that way.
It's coming down to inventory. You know, you can say there's this policy, that policy, but right now the number one issue is inventory. And certainly in Pittsfield and Berkshire County, we have an inventory. I mean, just talk to a realtor.
Right. Yeah, and then there's the quality of the housing stock, too, which is another thing, right? And it's not like they're building new land. You know, you have a sort of a limited amount of land, and you have a lot of housing that was built, you know, pre-1939 in Pittsfield, or certainly a lot of it pre-1970. So that's something unique about Pittsfield
is the, because, you know, there's some things that are very much similar across the state, and but the thing that's unique about Pittsfield, it's the age of the housing stock, you know, so... Agreed.
And so, yeah. And I wonder what happened there, because that's a historical thing, right? That somehow the housing just stayed the way it was in a lot of ways, where in other places, maybe it was urban sprawl, where, you know, the urban centers just needed somewhere to go, and there was a lot of suburban land, and maybe those places got built out. Or I'm always fascinated by things like that.
No, I agree. And so why isn't it that, like, this house that was built, you know, in the early 30s, you know, and hasn't just been torn down and, you know, built again or things like that. So we do need to invest in our housing stock. And I think that's when we work, you know, that's when the city and the state need to work together. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited about having a new housing secretary. I understand he was here this week. Yeah. And that's when I was in Boston. That was kind of a, you know, when the governor and the housing secretary, you know, come to town, I certainly like to be there. But we were in a very important session on Wednesday, and I wasn't able to be here. But that the governor has said, so we used to have, it was the Secretary of Economic Development and Housing.
Okay.
And so she has split that up because housing has to be its own. So it's housing and livable communities is that secretariat. And so I'm anxious to work with Secretary Augusta to do that work. I want to mention one more thing in the tax package. Yeah, I said, there were many things in it. There's an earned income tax credit that's really going to help low income folks. There's also, importantly, for seniors, we have doubled the senior circuit breaker tax credit from $1,200 to $2,400 a year.
Okay.
And so that's real dollars in a senior's pocket.
So how does the circuit breaker function? How does that work?
So when it is something about like what your income is, and you don't have to, it's a credit. Mm-hmm. So it's actual dollars. It's not a deduction, but it's dollars in your pocket. And so I really encourage seniors to be looking out for that for when they file their taxes next year.
Okay. So that'll be
And it applies to this year. Okay.
Okay.
So when you file for next year, it should be there for you. And so again, those are dollars in your pocket.
Yeah. And sometimes people don't realize it. I think they focus a lot of times on the federal tax filing, which of course you do the federal and the state at the same time. And you sort of expect that the Massachusetts just sort of follows along with it, but it doesn't necessarily. Sometimes there are big differences in terms of what kind of credits that you can get.
Exactly.
It's actually a much longer section at the end of the Massachusetts tax filing. If you're answering a lot more questions at the end, but some of those could definitely affect you.
Talk to your tax preparer, or if you're doing one of those online things, just know that, you know, be looking out for that.
Yeah, for sure. We're speaking with our state representative for Pittsfield, the 2nd Berkshire District, Tricia Farley Bouvier, freshly back from a long, busy, productive week at the State House. We had that visit from the governor on Wednesday, and wow, what a... it's always a big deal, right? When the governor comes to town, there's definitely something that's going to happen. And you must know from being in on the Boston side when stuff like that's going to happen. But this week was kind of a busy week there, right? What was the big vote on Wednesday?
So on Wednesday, we took a vote after a lot of work on a gun safety bill. It's about modernizing our gun laws. And it was important to take up this legislation for two main reasons motivating us. One was to address the proliferation of ghost guns. So ghost guns are guns that are literally 3D printed. Like you could 3D print parts of a gun and put it together in your basement, in your living room, whatever.
And it's off the radar, right?
And it's off the radar because
there's no serial numbers, not trackable.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They're not. Often there's no serial numbers and they're not registered.
Yeah.
Now you can say, oh, well, somebody's just doing that for themselves. Well, actually what is happening is, and they have raided these big ghost gun, like mills, factories where, you know, hundreds of these are being printed and trafficked on the street. And so we're saying that ghost guns need to be serialized and registered just like everybody, all the other guns that are manufactured, you know, by a national manufacturing, like a Smith & Wesson. If you do it in your living room or you do it, or Smith & Wesson, they both have to be serialized. Now, there's, even on that one, that issue of serialization, The original legislation that came out in early in the summer had it be, you had to have it serialized in multiple places on the gun, given the feedback from gun owners and such, we learned how it would be difficult to do that. And so we're saying the frame has to be serialized. Huh.
So that, there are parts of it that basically can be put together without without the number, right? And,
right.
And there are other parts that can't or can be incorporated. I don't know all the details of
yeah.
it. But it sounds to me like reasonable, if, even if you are a legitimate and responsible gun owner, you would want these things to be all the same, right? You wouldn't want there to be, you know, this element of folks that probably shouldn't have a gun.
Right. Well, and what we hear over and over again from those who are advocating for gun rights is, please address the illegal gun owners. Please address mm-hmm. the criminals. And that's exactly what we're doing here.
Yeah.
We're saying, no, it's illegal to have a gun that is not serialized mm-hmm. and registered. The other thing, it modernized the registration process. So the registration was happening before just upon sales. And if I sold you a gun, I was responsible for registering the sale. And now we're saying, well, okay, so let's compare it to cars.
Mm.
Like, it doesn't matter who sold me the car. I need to register the car. That's my responsibility. So if I had sold you a gun 3 or 4 years ago and I didn't record that with the state, you might have an unregistered gun, and it wasn't your responsibility to do it, but we have an unregistered gun here.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's going to be modernized. It's going to be much easier to do it. It's going to happen online. I think in the end, it like when new systems get set up, you know, it takes some time, but in the end, I think it's going to be better for everybody.
Mm.
Then there is... as you know, Sean, if we look back at the, you know, the horror and tragedy of the mass shootings that are happening
mm-hmm.
at schools, at concerts, at movie theaters, the great majority of them in the last few years have been, not every one of them,
mm.
but have been by people who are under 21 years old.
Mm.
And so we have limited what you can purchase before you're age 21. So there was a lot of concern for people, from sportsmen to say, well, you know, why can't I own, you know, a rifle? So mm-hmm. we're saying two things. One, yes, the long gun, the rifle, you can own after age 18. And you can use other guns like a semi-automatic weapon under the supervision of a licensed owner.
Mm.
21.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to say is I think that these are common sense, and we made so many changes from the early iteration of that bill, which was this past summer, because there was a lot of listening that was going on.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, yeah.
And you know, again, you have to balance those things out, right? Because you do have legal and responsible gun owners who want to, you know, use it for sport and for other legitimate reasons, mm-hmm. lots of reasons why. And yet, you know, you have to have gun laws that protect people from the people that shouldn't have those. And Massachusetts does have one of the lowest, if not the lowest, mm-hmm. Gun crime rates in the country, right? So you can, I don't know if you can draw a straight line between the two, but you got to say that it's got to be related in some way.
I agree it's related. And since July 1st, we have had hundreds of shootings in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and some of those, several of those involved ghost guns.
Mm.
So these things do have to happen.
Yeah. And those issues are, we're not mm-hmm. Unfamiliar with those issues here in Pittsfield also,
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So I just want to mention two more things. We have ERPO, which is the Extreme Risk Protection Orders, or the red flag laws, about, like, if you're worried about a family member, you can ask for some help from law enforcement to, like, you know, go to a hearing to be able to say, should this person have guns right now in their life because they're having some difficulty. We've expanded the number of people who can request that, including health professionals. And then the other thing that's important is that over the years, The legislature has worked with the Gun Owners Action League, and they've heard over and over again that our laws in Massachusetts, you know, every time you change a law in Massachusetts, you change this little thing, you change this little thing. Mm. And it's resulted in some in confusion, in contradictory sections. Mm-hmm. And so the bulk of the law, you're going to hear some people say it's 122-page, you know, law. It's really complicated. The bulk of that law in pages and paragraphs and words is to clean up all of that, to make everything more streamlined and consistent. And this is exactly what the Gun Owners Action League asked for.
Interesting. Well, I mean, certainly with all the legislation that you deal with, things are going to contradict sometimes, and it's hard to clean that stuff up. We hear about, you know, the ancient laws on the books sometimes.
That's right,
those
right.
are always fun to think about. Right. But in reality, it is things that you have to deal with, and that's part of what we have a state legislature for, to pass these laws and to work with groups, you know, like the Gun Owners Action League and interested parties when it comes to laws like this. Tricia Farley Bouvier is our guest here this morning. She is our state representative for the 2nd Berkshire District, representing all the wards and precincts in Pittsfield. And we are going to be back with Tricia in just a moment. First, we'll take our little top of the hour break, and then we'll come back, do the weather, and we will come back and discuss more with our state representative. Stick around. Morning Drive will be back on 89.7 WTBR FM.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield.
It's a whole new way of life.
Well, let's hear it.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal, opportunity grows here, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from Thunderdome Strength and Conditioning, committed to helping you reach your full potential. Find out what Ray can get done for you. Contact Ray at 551-264-3370 or find them online at thunderdomestrengthandconditioning.com.
Pittsfield Community Television has relaunched our website at pittsfieldtv.org with a new design to make it easier to find our live streams with PCTV Select, where you can watch live sports, city meetings, and more. Now it's simple to find our past shows on demand and future TV schedules. You can also quickly find information on how to be a member, our upcoming training sessions, and how to donate to PCTV. Check it out at pittsfieldtv.org.
Let's take a moment to talk about your wellness. Financial wellness, that is.
Deposit a portion of your everyday paycheck directly into your savings account. Set it and forget it, and watch your money grow.
When shopping, grab a basket instead of a cart to avoid impulse buys. Or even better, write a shopping list and stick to it.
This money hack brought to you by your neighbors at Greylock Federal Credit Union. All financial education and coaching resources are free and open to the public. Greylock Federal Credit Union, insured by NCUA.
Fall is just around the corner, and that can mean only one thing. You are about to be haunted. That's right, it's time to plan for the WTBR Halloween Spooktacular. Join Peter and Jessica Matisse at 6 p.m. on October 31st for 2 ghoulish hours of Halloween hits. That's 6 p.m. Halloween night. We'll be seeing you, dead or alive.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sandrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM. I'm Sean Sayre here with you live and local this morning. on Friday, October 20th. Yes, it is already that much through October. And we have Tricia Farley Bouvier as our guest this morning on the show, talking about all kinds of state and legislative issues this morning. Good catch up with her. And first, we're going to go back to the weather and check that out. And we'll come right back to our conversation with Tricia. Here we go.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, showers likely this morning, then showers with a slight chance of thunderstorms this afternoon. Highs in the lower 60s. Southeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Gusts up to 30 miles per hour this afternoon. Chance of rain 80%. Tonight, rain. Lows in the lower 50s. Southeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of rain 90%. Saturday, rain. Highs in the upper 50s. North wind 5 to 10 miles per hour, increasing to northwest 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour in the afternoon. Chance of rain 90%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Rain, rain, more rain. That's all we get. But here we are. And as long, you know, maybe if we can get a nice night for the Halloween parade next Friday, that might be nice.
I just think that sometimes you just need to decide, you know, what narrow your expectations and just be grateful for things like that. Instead of saying we need every weekend to be clear and cloudless, we just say, let's have a nice Halloween.
Yeah,
parade.
Once in a while. Yeah. That's all we want. Of course, we could have the opposite, which we had the year or so before where we had no rain and we had water restrictions. It's just, you know, feast or famine. So what are you going to do?
So, and that's, you know, what we're dealing with these days, and having to figure out how to manage water is going to be the challenge of the Northeast.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to climate change.
Yeah.
So.
And luckily, it seems like Pittsfield is in a pretty decent place for that. We have pretty secure water resources, but as we see, anything can change and you have to be prepared.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So lots of stuff going on at the state level, as we talked about in the first half. We've got much more going on. You've got a couple of bills that you're working on right now, and those are things that, and again, the process is a long process, right, with state legislation. So you might introduce a bill now, and it's the whole session is a two-year session, right? So this is something that could continue on until next year. But what are a couple of the highlights of the ones you're introducing?
So when you change a policy at the state level, the average actually is 6 years to pass a bill. That's normal.
Which would mean that it has to go and then die and then live
that's
again
right.
and then die
exactly.
again maybe.
So you refile, what we call refile a bill. And that is what we call the deliberative process. Mm. You know, what you don't want in state government is to have things move so fast that it's not thoughtful and you're not bringing all the stakeholders and it's not like, oh, this is the thing that's like big issue today, and so we're going to change a law about it, and then things are, you know, all over the place. So sometimes it can be frustrating.
And you want that, right?
Right, you want that. You want the deliberative process.
Yeah, you don't want something that's so hot right away, and then you make a decision on it, and then you realize later, well, we didn't really think that all through because, you know, now that we've got some unintended consequences.
Exactly. You know? We live in a world of unintended consequences. So I'm happy to talk about a couple of bills.
Yeah.
As you know, Sean, I spend there's a lot of focus of mine on the child welfare system and different bills to improve that system.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot there, but I'm going to talk about one that's new for me this session, and it's in response to something that was came through on National Public Radio investigation, and that is all over the country. Literally all 50 states are siphoning off foster children's Social Security benefits, and they're putting them in those funds into the general fund.
Wow.
So let me explain that a little
bit. That's bizarre.
So there's a lot of kids in our foster system in Massachusetts and all over the country. A subset of those children are eligible for Social Security benefits or Social Security disability benefits.
Depending on their needs or their situation.
Their situation. Mm-hmm. So, again, not all children know, have those. And the state is, and this is legal, has been taking those funds and putting them into the general fund.
Mm.
And it's millions and millions of dollars a year. And it's, you know, here are these kids who are so vulnerable. Many of those who are receiving those benefits will age out of the foster system and be on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And the we call them aging. We call that phrase aging out. Mm-hmm. Okay, you hear that a lot. Youth aging out of the foster system are some of the most vulnerable people that we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have a support system, and they're 18 years old. Now, Sean, at one time in your life, you had a couple of 18-year-olds,
yes,
right? Are they, were they ready at that time to face the world on their own?
They had a lot of challenges,
yeah,
let's put it that way. And not only that, at that very moment as parents, when they're 18, you realize, oh, I can't make medical decisions for them anymore. Mm-hmm. I can't help them. I can't be the one to, you know, schedule things. They have to do that for themselves.
Yeah.
It's a quick transition,
right,
between basically a kid that you're taking care of, mm-hmm, and what everyone else considers to be an adult, when,
right,
whether they're ready for that or not.
But you're there to support them through that.
Yeah.
Whether it might be called nagging.
Mm-hmm.
It might be their safety net. It might,
right,
just be, you know, a safe space every once in a while. You're having a bad time, come home for the weekend or something like,
sure,
that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you, a lot of people can relate to their kids, you know, bringing their kids to college the first time and preparing them for the college.
Mm-hmm.
That whole summer before college, right, there's a lot going on. You're going, yeah, to get the stuff, you know, you got to get the bedding and you got to, mm-hmm, get the drawers that fit under this, the bed.
Yeah.
There's so much to do.
And they just want to hang out with their friends.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But these kids don't have any of that. These kids who are aging out, and they don't have any financial resources at all,
yeah,
except for maybe a part-time job or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the fact that the state has taken their money over the years, and then they start with no, you know,
with nothing.
With nothing,
yeah,
you know, doesn't make any sense. And these are some of our most vulnerable children. And in the sense, we can say we're asking them to pay for their own services. Well, we don't ask for other people to pay for their own state services.
Hmm.
We don't say, oh, we're going to go to, you know, the Department of Transitional Assistance, and I'm sorry, you're going to pay for those services, right? We don't ask people to go to the senior center and say, oh, but you have to pay for these services.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are government services for a reason.
Yeah.
And so to have our most vulnerable children having to give up those funds isn't right. So I, you know, you hear that and you're like, oh my, I just didn't know. Right. And I think, like, most people I talk to, they're like, I didn't know,
yeah,
that.
And if it's being done across all 50 states.
Right.
Right. It almost seems like a mountain you can't climb. Right.
Well, we're climbing it. So, and the other outrage of this, so that's outrageous.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
And I can get myself a little out, you know, like, I can get worked up about things. I admit that. But something even more outrageous is that there's a law firm that is paid by the Commonwealth more than $1 million a year to process that.
So now we have an interested party that wants to keep that system in place,
right,
I assume. Yeah.
And so it's, so people are enriching themselves,
mm-hmm,
off of vulnerable children's money. And so we need to make these changes. And we can do that by setting up special accounts for these kids, as we do for people with disabilities, so that they can retain these funds without being penalized.
Yeah, makes sense.
And so that's the
and
work that we're doing.
Something that could be held in trust or reserve for them,
exactly,
so that they can't touch it until they've got a certain, you know, they've reached the age of 18,
right,
they're off on their own, they've aged out, and
right,
et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's one bill that I'm working on. I'm really proud of that work. I'm working with my Senate partner in a lot of things in child welfare, Joe Comerford, from Northampton.
Yep.
Another bill that I don't know if I've talked on this show about this bill, is what we're calling the Sex Trade Survivors Act.
Wow.
So, you know, people are like, what are you doing, Tricia? Like, you know, what does that have to do with Pittsfield? Well, the commercial sex trafficking trade is alive and well in Massachusetts,
yeah,
and indeed in Pittsfield.
Yeah.
And, you know, what does that mean? What are you talking? We are purchasing people's bodies. Yes, indeed, we are.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, this problem has gotten worse in recent years because of the proliferation of, you know, internet sales. Mm-hmm. And so instead of just, you're saying to yourself, well, I don't see women standing on the street corner, you know, it's, you know, the sort of that classic prostitute look. Mm-hmm. That's not happening. No, but people are, you know, connecting on apps and online.
There's this thing called the internet we have now. You should really look into it.
Yes. Yeah. And so it is almost always connected to those who are living with addiction. Mm-hmm. And but it's also, you know, when I say trafficking, it's, I'm not kidding. You know, these are, you know, big operators that are trafficking vulnerable, mostly women, but also young men.
Yeah. And anyone who's listened to this program and heard our show with the Second Street, Second Chances folks, know that it's a real issue here in Pittsfield. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not afraid to talk about it mm-hmm. here, because the more you can get information like that out, the more people realize that it's a problem and it has to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm. So what is this? What does this bill do? What does this policy change do? We need to treat the victims of this as victims. Mm-hmm. So the worker, sometimes referred to as a sex worker, the old term would be prostitute, mm-hmm. okay? That person is a victim, right? Yeah. They're not the criminal.
Yeah.
The criminal is the person buying and the person trafficking,
yep.
usually different people.
Yeah.
And so this bill would set up, one, that it's not a crime, but two, how are we going to provide services so that these, and I'm going to say women, can get out of the life,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, what's the transition, the support systems to get out of the life?
Yeah, because it can be a trap.
That's right.
Once you're ensnared in that trap, you're beholden.
And, that's right.
It's a very difficult thing to get out of. So how do you do that and try and effect positive change for these people and for society, really?
I agree. And then people will say, you'll hear, especially law enforcement, well, we never prosecute them anyway. A DA is never going to prosecute that victim.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a criminal record, you know, once that person is arrested.
Right.
And sadly, particularly in different parts of the state, there is real abuse
mm-hmm.
By law enforcement of these individuals, of entrapment,
sure.
for example. And there's oftentimes crimes related to this
mm-hmm.
that then go on their record, for example, like a shoplifting
petty theft.
Charge or things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really have to work to support people trying to get out of the life instead of making their lives harder. And we're not, this is a way that we can stop, you know, this industry, which mm-hmm. is really harmful to people.
Yeah.
Now, Sean, this country has a horrific record, right? And history of selling bodies.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
And this is a continuation of that. And we had a briefing the other day. And one of the women speaking, she runs an organization called My Life, My Choice.
Hmm.
And Black women and girls are sold at a higher rate than white women and girls and for a lower price.
Hmm.
Right? And it's just a continuation of this history that we have of selling bodies, and that needs to stop.
Yeah. And then, of course, all the interrelated issues, right? They are not silos or islands unto themselves.
Yeah.
Substance abuse, you mentioned, mental health, housing.
Right.
All right. All of these things tie in, and then some of the crime and petty
mm-hmm.
theft and things like that that are all issues that we deal with on a societal basis. None of them can be solved specifically with one thing. You have to take these things down, you know, and attack them as a group, right? As something
right.
that are
and,
all
well, knowing that not and, one and, thing is going to solve
yeah,
in the problem,
right. and right. working on one thing though can help something else.
That's right.
That's another right. thing that we see.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you know, it might not be something that people see in their everyday. It's not part of their life
mm-hmm.
or in front of them in their life, but to think that it doesn't impact this community, it's just that, you know, that's just not realistic.
No, yeah. Right. You know, and it's important to bring the issues out because if you think that everything's just fine, you can go about your day and not worry about it. But, you know, there are these issues out there, and people are dealing with them, and they might be people you know. They might be people related to you. And the same issues that we've talked about with substance use disorder and mental health and housing. So all tied together. Tricia Farley Bouvier is our guest this morning. She's the state representative for the 2nd Berkshire District in Pittsfield, all of Pittsfield. And we're talking to her about many of the state issues and legislation she's working on. Joint Committee on Advanced Information Technology, the Internet, and Cybersecurity.
It's a mouthful.
It is, and that's why I wrote it down, as a matter of fact. you are the chair, or one of the two chairs of that joint committee, along with, who's the Senate side?
Senator Michael Moore.
Michael Moore.
Yeah.
And so that is a fairly new committee, and you were just named to that committee this year. So some of the things you're working on in that committee?
Yeah, so there's, I would say, four big issue, you know, issues. Two are big issues, and two are more, well, I shouldn't say that. Let's just talk about the four things. Okay, so cybersecurity is a really big issue.
Yep.
And how are we working to support municipalities, hospitals, individuals, businesses from... these cybersecurity attacks.
Yeah, ransomware attacks.
And in the end, it's the customer, the consumer, the resident, the patient from a hospital. So how do we...
And those folks with their data being breached and then used somewhere else, it affects everyone.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then, so a lot of things have been put into place for that support. And, you know, so that is growing over time and real infrastructure in there to be able to do it. And so we work with the administration on that and with quasi-public agencies and, you know, a nonprofit called the Cyber Trust to support. I was at a keynote speaker in Worcester a couple of weeks ago where, you know, municipal... chief information officers gathered and, you know, our own, you know, here from Pittsfield, we're here, Mr. Zawistowski from Pittsfield, you know, he's doing an incredible job for Pittsfield. We're very, very lucky to have him.
He was just on our show last week, as a matter of fact.
Probably learned a few things about two-factor authentications and, you know, things like that. And so... I want to make sure that, you know, we're part of that conversation, not only my responsibility to Pittsfield to make sure Pittsfield has the resources, but how can we really build that infrastructure here across the Commonwealth. Wow. Another important related issue is AI, right? So we really need to not bury our head in the sands around AI. And so we're working to get, I have to say government moves very slowly. We talked about that, in passing bills.
Yeah.
And we don't have the luxury of moving slowly when it comes to AI because AI is just leaving us in the dust.
Technology changes very quickly.
And this is not like other technology changing quickly. This is not, it's not going to be something that just impacts, like people talk about disruptive economy. So Uber and Lyft was a disruptive economy, right? It changed a lot of things, you know, and, you know, the taxi drivers are the ones that were hit most directly on that. Airbnb is a disruptive economy, right? But AI is going to impact everything, not just certain industries.
Yeah. And it's happening. And in ways that we can't even imagine
right now. And it's happening really, really fast.
Yeah.
But think about how AI then relates to cybersecurity, right? Like it's going to be harder and harder to protect ourselves when AI is involved in these attacks.
Yeah.
You know, if the AI is now a tool of the ransomware.
Yeah.
You know,
it's basically like a cyber con game in a way, right? I mean, you're fighting against now, is this, you know, email coming through legitimate? Is this from a source I know? Well, it looks like it. Yeah. Well, maybe it's not, right?
That's right. Right. So we really have to do a lot of training about that. I'm sure that, you learned and when you talked to him about how it's the end user that is the biggest vulnerability.
Right, right.
You know, you can lock your front door, you can put three, four, six locks on it, but if somebody leaves a window open, then that house is vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah, and the whole house, right?
And the whole
house.
That's
houses, the point, right? Is a one end user can also affect and make vulnerable lots of other people.
That's right. Yeah. And then there's something that you, Sean, first introduced me to, and that is the issue of community access televisions, television stations like PCTV, that is funded through a requirement that, for example, in Pittsfield, that Spectrum pays the city of Pittsfield 5% of the of their revenue, then and then a big chunk of that revenue comes here to PCTV to fund you with the looming collapse of the cable system because so many people are, cutting the cord.
Streaming TV is a disruptive economy.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And so we very much need to ensure the continuation of community television. I believe strongly that it's literally about saving democracy.
Yeah.
And so
at a local level.
At the local level, which that's where democracy starts, right? If we don't have people covering the Conservation Commission and the school committee meetings, you know, those kinds of things are extremely important. Yeah. So I'm committed to looking for a solution to that. It's not easy, okay? But I'm working on that. The last thing and I'll talk about, and it could be the biggest thing, is a comprehensive data privacy law. And so it was actually just yesterday that we had the hearing on that. There are several bills in front of the committee about data privacy. People have heard that word data privacy. And, you know, it gets to be like, I don't really understand, you know, exactly what that means. But, you know, the more you learn, the more I learn, the scarier I get.
Yeah. Well, your private data is everywhere.
And,
you know, it's not like you can really decide sometimes that you will or will not give that data, right? If you're in a hospital, they're going to take your data because you have to do that in order to get private. Anything with the state RMV or, you know, signing up for a streaming service. I mean, anything, right? You're giving away your data all the time.
So do you have a game on your phone?
Actually, I'm not much of a phone game guy, no.
Do you have a flashlight on your phone?
I do.
Do you have the weather app on your phone?
I do.
So the weather app is obviously collecting your location data.
Sure.
Okay. And, of course, you want to say, okay, you're in your current location. You're in Pittsfield. And what's the weather in Pittsfield? Okay, blah, blah, blah. But the weather app also knows whether you like Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks.
Yeah.
And what is the weather app doing with your data?
Selling
Why are
it.
They collecting your
They're
data
selling
to begin it.
It,
right?
Yeah.
They're selling it,
sure.
Right? They know, the weather app knows whether you're a runner or you're not a runner, or you prefer biking or you don't prefer biking. It's unbelievable what these apps are collecting.
And then the next question usually for me is, okay, that was innocuous enough. You, consented to that, when you installed the app or whatever. And then the company that was running the app, which was a good, white hat company, sells that whole thing to another company where their motives are not quite as clear.
That's right.
Right. And how do you even know, once that data is in someone else's hand, if that's really where you want it or not? Too late. You already agreed to it, right?
No.
Well, I usually say that if the product is free,
you're the product.
You are the product.
That's exactly right. And Google, if you think you're searching Google, you're wrong. Google is searching you. So, your phone itself is collecting tremendous amount of data on you.
Right.
And of course, for most people, their phone is with them all the time. What data is being collected on you? It should be just what is reasonable for the purpose of that activity. So, for example, the weather app, it makes certain to know what city you're in and all that. If you have a app on your phone, like Amazon, or even let's say you have an app for a particular store, it's reasonable for them to collect data so they know about, they can collect data about fraud, they can collect data about, where are you? So we can tell you where the closest one of our stores are, right? How are you going to make a return on something? Like, that's reasonable. But are they collecting all this data so that they can sell it? Just because I'm going to try to freak everybody out as much as I can right now.
And we got 30 seconds.
Okay. The thing collecting more data on you than anything else is your car. Your car is absolutely has location data. Yeah. Your car is now collecting biometric data on you. And what are they doing with it? We don't know. But they do not take good care of the data. They're selling your data. And it is really, really very scary.
Well, why wouldn't you trust a guy like Elon Musk? I mean, he seems so nice.
So
but that's where it's headed, right?
Data privacy is something that's incredibly important for us to get a hold of and make restrictions. They are passing it in other states. The federal law, they cannot get their act together in Congress to do it, so we need to do it at the state level.
Yep, certainly. Tricia Farley-Bouvier, always great talking with you here on the program. Thanks for all your insight and good work in the State House.
Thank you. Appreciate it's always it. A good conversation, but the problem is we always run out of time,
We
Sean.
Do. I know. It's crazy. Well, we'll come back and do it again, I promise.
All right. Thanks, all right. Sean.
Thanks,
have a
everybody.
Good day.
Yes, and have a great weekend out there, everybody. Hope you enjoy staying inside and dodging the raindrops over the weekend. All right. Take care, everybody. Take care.